The Columbia Workshop presents Evelyn Waugh's A Handful of Dust, adapted for radio by Elizabeth and James Hart. I will show you something different from either your shadow at morning striding behind you, or your shadow at evening rising to meet you. I will show you fear in a handful of dust.
Could you go a bit faster, Jock?
Afraid not, Tony. I have the accelerator down to the floor right now. We'll make London in well under an hour.
Suppose the evening papers have got hold of it already. Bender may see it on a placard. Or just pick up a paper casually and there it'll be. That's with a photograph.
I was thinking of that when I suggested telephoning.
Telephoning would have been easier for me, in a way. I shouldn't have had to see the way she looked. But she would have been alone after I hung down. She'd have had to come out to Hetton alone. Still so hard to believe that it really happened. To realize it's the same day. 12:28 when I heard. I looked at my wristwatch. Brenda gave me the watch for Christmas. There's my name engraved on it. It was 1:05 when they brought John Andrew in.
You mustn't, Tony. It's no good going over it.
I suppose people would be saying that I never should have let a boy as young as John ride in a hunt meet. Brenda didn't see any harm in it. The pony was so steady. He only went for the first covert. Oh, God, if only I hadn't let him go. But he was so set on it.
It just happened. It wasn't anybody's fault.
Going to be so much worse for Brenda than it is for me. You see, she had nothing much except John Andrew. I've got her, and I love Hetton, the house and the land and the looking after it. But with Brenda, her son always came first, naturally. She's seen so little of him lately. She's been in London such a lot. That may hurt her. She may have some foolish sense of guilt.
You can't ever tell what'll hurt anybody.
I can tell with Brenda. I know her so well. You see, it's the first time since John Andrew was born that she's been away from us for more than a few days. Cost so much to keep up Hetton that we couldn't afford a townhouse, too. When she spoke of taking this little flat in London, I urged her to.
I suppose you've been able to run up to town now and then.
Not so very often. Brenda can't put me up, you see. Flat's hardly big enough to turn round in. And unless I tell her a long time in advance, she always has some party to go to. I was never so keen on London parties. And then, too, John Andrew gets lonely when we're both away. I wonder why I go on thinking of him as alive. It's so odd that I can't realize it yet.
This is the house, isn't it?
Yes. I can't tell her, Jock. I can't.
Don't think about what you're going to say. When you see her...
No, I can't do it. I've come all the way to London because I couldn't bear to have it told by anyone else, and now I can't say it.
Shall I? Then after a few minutes you can come up. Then.
Yes. Yes, I can talk to her after she knows. The first words that I can't say while she still thinks he's alive. Do you mind?
Not at all.
Tell her why I sent you. Make her understand.
I shall.
Oh, you're fearfully late, my darling. I was beginning to think... It's Jock.
Hello, Brenda.
Oh, what on earth are you?
May I come in?
Well, of course. That is, if you don't mind being turned out again almost immediately.
I'm afraid your date's off, Brenda.
What do you mean? How did you know I... You look so extraordinary, Jock. What is it?
Better brace yourself.
Tell me quickly.
There's been a very serious accident.
Not John?
Yes.
Dead?
Yes.
I knew something awful had happened. I felt it while I was sitting here waiting. Well, why do you know about it first? You never see him?
I've been down at Hetton for the weekend.
Hetton?
Don't you remember? John was to ride a little way with the hunt.
John? Oh, you mean John Andrew? I thought... Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God.
Tony's downstairs. He couldn't bear to break it to you himself.
How did it happen?
Took a spill. Horse behind him kicked him in the skull.
Oh, poor little boy. Oh, little boy.
Better save all that for Tony.
Oh, Jock, when you first told me, I didn't understand. I didn't say anything, did I?
You know what you said.
But I didn't mean it, you see.
Yes, I see. You thought I was talking about John Beaver.
A jock, you...
There's no point in trying to explain to me, Brenda. Here's Tony. He's probably the only person in London who needs an explanation.
Frankly, Tony, even if Brenda is my sister, I think she's acted most foolishly. But isn't this just the time to show some tolerance and understanding?
I'm letting her divorce me, Reggie. That's what she wants.
My dear fellow, she doesn't know what she wants. I met this Beaver chap the other day. I don't like him at all, do you?
Isn't that rather a strange question to ask me?
But surely you must see that Brenda can't go on long fancying herself in love with a chap like that. If you'll only be patient...
Reggie, I find this conversation extremely distasteful.
Brenda tells me you and she have had some preliminary conversation about a financial settlement.
I shouldn't call it preliminary. I've decided to let her have £500 a year, and she's agreed.
Seems to me that you rather took advantage of her generosity. She admits now she was half crazed over the death of her child at the time and hardly knew what she was saying.
And what does she suggest now that she's calmer?
Well, I've discussed it with the solicitors in the family, and we've decided that it should be raised to £2,000 a year.
But that's impossible. It would mean I'd have to sell Hetton. Brenda couldn't have meant that. She knows that Hetton is the only thing I have left that I love, now that she and John Andrew are gone. I can't believe that Brenda ever wanted or expected me to agree to this.
I assure you she did, my dear fellow. The truth is, Beaver is cutting up nasty. He has practically nothing of his own, and he says he can't marry Brenda unless she's properly provided for. Not fair to her, he says. I quite see his point in a way.
So you're asking me to give up Hetton in order to buy Beaver for Brenda?
I shouldn't put it that way. I say, where are you going?
Telephone Brenda. I shan't be long. Brenda, are you there? This is Tony.
Oh, hello, Tony. How are you?
I've been dining with Reggie at the club.
Yeah, I'm so glad you've come up to town. I'm sure Hetton is bad for you just now. You must go about a lot, old boy, and not brood. I should hate to...
Reggie tells me you want £2,000 a year now.
Well, the solicitors are doing everything. I really have...
But you do know that they proposed to ask for £2,000.
Well, they did say something about that. I know it seems rather...
You know exactly how my money stands, don't you? You know, I couldn't afford to give you that and keep Hetton, too.
Oh, Tony, don't try to make me feel... So difficult.
You do know what you're asking.
Yes, I suppose so.
All right. I just wanted to be sure of that.
Tony, how odd you sound. Here, don't ring off. Oh!
Well?
You were quite right, Reggie. I'm sorry I didn't believe you at first. It seemed so unlikely.
That's quite all right, my dear fellow.
I've decided exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Brenda is not going to get a divorce.
Oh,
I'm going away
here
for 6 months or so, and when I come back, if she wishes, I shall divorce Brenda without settlement of any kind. Is that clear?
But that's monstrous. Monstrous.
I'm going downstairs for a smoke. Good night.
Good evening, Mr. Last. Oh, pardon me. You are Mr. Last, aren't you?
I'm sorry. Good evening.
I think Jock Grant Menzies introduced us last month. My name's Messinger.
Yes, of course. You're the explorer.
Oh, in a small way, yes.
Brazil, wasn't it? Some sort of Indian city that's been lost for centuries? Did you ever find it?
I haven't yet started to look for it. I should have left last week if a rascal named Ponsonby hadn't robbed me of the machine guns and £300.
Rough luck.
Do you know Brazil?
No, I've travelled very little. Never cared for it much, to tell the truth.
No, I don't like conventional travel myself. The civilized world is depressingly uniform.
Yes, I suppose wherever you go, you're apt to bung into the same sort of people.
Not on this expedition of mine. I shall go into terrain that no white man has ever set foot on.
Really? You will be quite alone then, won't you? Except for guides. I suppose you'll have Indians?
Yes, yes. There's a Makushi village where I hope to get canoes built and recruit men to take me to the Paiwai country. The Paiwais are a very superior tribe. With their help, I'm pretty sure to find the city.
How much did you say you needed to get hold of? £300?
Hello?
Messinger. Messinger.
Right here. I thought something swooped at me. A vampire bat. I drove him away. There won't be any more. Now it's getting light. Well, how do you feel?
Well, the fever seems to have gone. It was just a passing attack, wasn't it?
I hope so. Well, now you're awake, I want you to try and eat something. I've made some cocoa and heated a little rice.
Where are the Mikushi guides? Well,
they've all gone off.
The hunt?
No. Deserted. Crept off without a word sometime during the night.
Deserted? But why?
Well, God knows. Homesick for their women. Bored. Now, you mustn't be alarmed. The situation is grave, but it's not desperate. Now, drink this cocoa.
Did they take all the stores?
A good part of them.
Are we lost?
I don't think so. When we reach a Paivai village, we shall be all right. How does the cocoa taste?
Grand. I'm feeling much better.
Could you possibly manage to get to the canoe?
Yes, I believe so.
I'd like to push on while you're out of fever. We can't risk the canoe when your temperature's up, you know. You nearly upset us the day before yesterday.
I'm sorry. I thought I saw someone I knew.
You thought a lot of things. Come now, I'll help you out of the hammock. Right. If you care, we'll take it slowly.
Oh, my legs do feel queer.
Well, lean more on me. Yes, that's it. Get into the bow.
Yes.
I've arranged the stores so that you can stretch out a bit. You comfortable?
Quite, thank you.
Well, then we'll shove off. Just lie there quietly and try to sleep.
Jessica, I'm cold. I'm freezing.
You have a chill. Take some quinine. I put it there beside you, the canteen of drinking water.
Right.
Take a stiff dose. We've got to go on. We've come a long distance this morning, and we can't be far from the village now.
It's almost noon by my watch. What time is that in England?
About 7 o'clock in the evening.
7 o'clock is a very beautiful hour in England in June. The sun has set, but the light doesn't go with the sun the way it does here. Oh, my quinine's nasty stuff. Always starts bells ringing in my head.
I wonder if that can possibly be smoke ahead. Oh, it may only be a cloud, but it certainly...
I rather like bells when they're a decent distance away. They sound very pleasant at Hetton on a Sunday afternoon.
Chill any better?
All I wanted was to live quietly and decently at Hetton. I didn't really want to leave England. I went away because
oh,
I wanted
hold on just a little
be where
longer,
I wouldn't run into
sir.
A friend or a beaver.
I'm positive now that there's a village around the next bend.
Shaking their heads. Hard cheese, Richard. Hard cheese, Antony. Hard cheese, Antony.
Lie still, you concisers. I'm heading for the shore now. But we've hit some rapids that make it difficult to paddle. I'm trying to stay quiet.
What's that roaring?
Only some waterfalls. They must be just around the bend. Look, we've nearly reached the shore. You'll soon be out of the sun.
There now, Fenton. Didn't I tell you there was fine natural scenery in Brazil? Put down your book, darling. We're going to pass a waterfall. John Andrew mustn't miss it. I'll go get him.
What are you doing, you fool?
I'm going to
sit
get
down.
John.
I want... Sit down, Lucas!
Brenda, hand up, Messinger. I'm too winded to help her. Messinger, where are you? Why don't you answer me? It's hot in this beach, and the Indians have taken all the sun umbrellas. Brenda will get sunburned. Her skin's so delicate. Messinger, hurry, you should go off in a canoe with John Beaver. Make them stop those bells. It's absurd for the church to make such an uproar. Why are you all staring at me? You know who I am. I'm Tony Last. I know you're all friends of my wife's, and that's why you won't listen to me. But be careful.
She'll say nothing cruel. There'll be no hard words. But a week after the funeral, she'll leave you.
You must go about a lot, old boy, and not Peru.
I don't like him at all. Do you?
The city was the result of a migration from Peru. It wasn't anyone's fault. It just happened.
Don't let you go!
Precisely normal. Well, Mr. Last, you have gone 5 days now without a trace of fever.
I've been pretty ill, haven't I?
Very ill. And you had a narrow escape from drowning.
Oh. And Messinger, you're sure there's no hope? You're quite certain he was drowned?
Yes. It was quite impossible for my Indians to reach him in time. The waterfalls are not large, but, well, they were enough.
Poor fellow.
Let us talk of more cheerful things. First, let me allow me to return your wristwatch.
Oh, thank you. I'd given it up for lost. I'm rather fond of this watch. My name's engraved on the back. You see, Brenda, my wife gave me this watch.
And very pretty, too. My Indians were delighted by it. Well, Mr. Last, I think we may consider you safely on the way to recovery.
Thanks to your nursing and your medicine, Mr. Todd.
There is a medicine for everything in the forest, to make you well and to make you ill. My mother was an Indian, and she taught me many of them.
Well, surely you're English.
My father was. He came to Brazil as a missionary. Then he lost his faith and settled down here in the forest with my mother until he died. He never went back.
But you've been away, of course.
No, never. You see, when my father ceased to believe in God, he came to hate the white man's civilization. I thought once that I would go away after his death, but then it was too late to adapt myself to another life. Do you believe in God?
Why, yes, I suppose so. I've never thought about it very much.
I've thought about it a great deal. And still, I do not know. Charles Dickens knew. It is apparent in all his books.
Are you fond of Dickens?
Far more than fond. I think of his books as blood relatives of mine, the only ones I have on my father's side. My father used to read them to me. He was a man of education. Can you read?
Yes, of course.
Not everyone is so fortunate. I cannot.
I'm frightfully sorry. I suppose you don't have anything to read anyhow off here in the bush.
Oh, that is just it. I have. I have all the books of Charles Dickens. After my father died, there was a long time, a long desolate time, Mr. Last, when I was deprived of them. Then an Englishman happened to come here. At least he was a black man, but he had been well educated in Georgetown. And he read to me every day. Perhaps when you are stronger, you will read to me.
I shall be delighted, Mr. Todd.
You cannot understand what it will mean to me. Sometimes I have regretted that my life has been so cut off from the world of my father's race. But when I can hear Dickens, I am content. I am quite sure there is nothing about the world that he has not told me. I wonder which book we should start with. I think perhaps Bleak House.
I never will. I never will, she promised me. I believe it, my dear Charlie. And now, come sit beside me for a little while and touch me with your hand. For I cannot see you, Charlie. I am blind. I think I'll rest my voice a bit now, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, do by all means. You read beautifully, Mr. Last. Far better than the black men.
We still have a lot to get through. Bleak House is a long book. I hope we shall be able to finish it before I go.
Oh, yes. Do not disturb yourself about that. You will have time to finish it, my friend.
Well, you know, Mr. Todd, the time has come when I really must be thinking about getting back to civilization. How soon do you think I shall get a boat? I appreciate your kindness to me more than I can say, but
any kindness I have shown is amply repaid by your reading of Dickens. Oh, do not let us mention the subject again.
Forgive me, Mr. Todd, but I really must press the point. When can I get a boat?
There is no boat.
But the Indians can build one.
Not until the rains. There's not enough water in the river now.
When will the rains come?
2 months, 3 months. Mr. Last, the Indians tell me you have been trying to speak with them.
Well, yes, I was.
You realize, do you not, that they would do nothing without my authority? Besides, they know that I have the only gun in the village.
I was trying to ask them to build a canoe.
So they gave me to understand.
Mr. Todd, I found this slip of paper today between the pages of Martin Chuzzlewit. It has disturbed me a good deal.
So? I'm very sorry. But, my friend, why do you give it to me? You know I cannot read.
I will read it to you. It is dated February 1924. It says, I, James Todd of Brazil, do swear to Barnabas Washington of Georgetown that if he finish this book, Martin Chuzzlewit, I will let him go away as soon as it is finished. There's an X pencil underneath, and after that is written, Mr. Todd made this
mark. Barnabas Washington.
Ah, yes, that was the black man.
So I guessed. The slip is dated 1924. You told me he didn't go back until 5 years ago.
I never told you that he went back at all. He died here.
Yeah.
When the rain stops, I think I shall put up a little cross on his grave to commemorate his death and your arrival. A pretty idea, don't you think?
Mr. Todd, you saved my life. And when I get back to civilization, I shall reward you to the best of my ability. But at present, you're keeping me here against my will.
But, my friend, what is keeping you? Go when you like.
You know I can't get away without your help. I'd be dead within a week if I tried to get back to the coast alone.
I fear you would, particularly as I could not undertake to outfit you with provisions. Well, now let us have a little supper so we can go back to Martin Chuzzlewit.
I have read for the last time.
Oh, I hope not. In that case, I shall set only one place for supper.
Here remains where you are, Mr. Last.
Stand away, Mr. Last. I should advise you not to attempt to seize this gun. It goes off very easily, and I should deplore an accident. Oh, what a pity you're not joining me at supper. We're having a game bird this evening.
Shelter to the group, and a rich prospect of arable and meadow land, interspersed with luxuriant hedges and richly ornamented wood, lay spread out before them. This is delightful. Thoroughly delightful, said Mr. Pickwick.
Wonderful passage, Mr. Last, a wonderful passage.
Yes.
The English countryside must be very beautiful.
Mind if I open the door?
I trust it is not painful for you to read about anything so remote.
Not a bit. You know, it doesn't seem so remote anymore. Oh, I see you put up the cross on the black man's grave.
Yes, just this morning. One of the Indians brought back exactly what I needed for it. Unfortunately, I cannot put any name on it since I cannot write. Possibly you could supply that.
I should be delighted. It will be a kind of ceremonial leave-taking.
Indeed.
Mr. Todd, I don't expect to be staying on with you much longer. I hope that my departure will not come as too shocking a surprise.
My friend, I'm never taken by surprise. My Indians serve as so many extra eyes and ears to apprehend what is happening.
Yes, they are very watchful. But then I've been very persevering. I was especially so when that prospector dropped in on us 5 months and 3 days ago.
Prospector?
Surely you remember him. He was on his way back to the coast, to Manaus. You took good care to hurry him on his way, and you did not, I believe, leave us alone together longer than 30 seconds. But as they say in the music hall, the hand is quicker than the eye.
I regret that I cannot follow you.
30 seconds is a very short time. Just long enough to whisper, English counsel, Manaus, and to scribble one's name on a piece of paper and slip it to the prospector.
And you believe that he understood this rather cryptic action?
Oh, yes. Well enough to give the piece of paper to the English counsel when he reached Manaus, anyhow. And that is all I desired.
Then you are expecting an early response to your communication?
I should say any day now, wouldn't you?
Yes, any day.
Shall we resume our reading? What a pity we shan't be able to finish. Pickwick is so delightful.
Is he not? But I'm sure he would say that this is not an occasion for reading. He deserves toasting and wassail.
I'm afraid we lack the necessary material.
We must take what the forest affords. Of course, we have no English grog, but I suppose we could substitute piwari.
Piwari?
An Indian drink, very raw when newly made, but mild and palatable when aged. Fortunately, I have some here that is quite old.
I say, you're being awfully sporting about this.
But, my friend, what did you expect? You have won, it seems. I have lost. I am not a man of malice.
Shall I propose the toast?
Please do.
To England.
to the England of Charles Dickens. Good afternoon, my friend. How do you feel?
Rotten. That drink didn't seem to agree with me. I say, this isn't your house. What?
Under the circumstances, I thought it best to have you removed to one of the Indian huts.
Was I very tight? What did I do? That piwari's a treacherous drink. Left me with a nasty hangover, too.
Oh, let us go back to my house, and I will give you something to make you feel better.
You haven't seen my wristwatch, have you? I must have taken it off in your place. Is it really afternoon? I've never slept so long.
I should be surprised if you had. 2 days.
2 days? Nonsense, I can't.
Yes, indeed. A shame, too, because you have missed our guests.
Guests?
Yes, 3 men from Manawas, Englishmen. It is a pity you missed them, particularly as they were so anxious to see you. But you were so sound asleep.
That piwari was drugged.
Yes, I'm afraid it was.
You swine. You contemptible.
Please.
You haven't won yet. You don't know the English. They'll go on looking for me. There'll be other search parties. They'll come back.
Oh, I think not. They wanted some memento of you, some souvenir to send back to England where a reward is being offered for proof of your whereabouts. So I hope you do not mind. I gave them your wristwatch. They were very pleased with it, particularly as it had your name engraved on the back. They seem to take a great interest in the black man's grave, too. They took close photographs of the little cross I put up for it. Several photographs. I think they intended to send those to England also. Of course, they quite understood that you were already very ill. Delirious, in fact, when you gave the slip of paper to the prospector.
How could you do a thing like that?
No, I do not suppose they will ever visit us again. Our life here is so retired. No pleasure except reading.
I can't understand it. I can't understand any of it. All I wanted was to live quietly with my wife and son at Hetton, like my father and my grandfather did. That wasn't asking so much.
Oh, your head aches, does it not? I will get you some medicine. We will not have any Dickens today. But tomorrow, and the day after, and the day after that. When we finish Pickwick, let us read Little Dorrit again. There are passages in that book I can never hear without the temptation to weep.
You have just heard the Columbia Workshop presentation, A Handful of Dust, adapted from the novel by Evelyn Waugh. The radio adaptation was prepared by Elizabeth and James Hart. Heard in tonight's broadcast were Lowell Gilmore in the part of Tony, Alfred Shirley as Todd, Reginald Bache as Dr. Messinger, Naomi Campbell as Brenda, Burford Hampden in the part of Reggie, and Sidney Smith as Jock. Music was arranged and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. The entire production was under the direction of Brewster Morgan. Next week at this time, the Columbia Workshop will present Norman Corwin's radio adaptation of the short story Salesmanship by Mary Ellen Chase. John Tillman speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.